You're listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 254. Hello, welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you in my basement here in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, Mr. John Gentile out of Philadelphia. Hi, John.
Hey, what's going on, Adam?
I'm drinking wine, John.
I'm drinking honest tea, half lemonade, organic, and it is taste tea, if you will.
Is that a brand, or is that like some bullshit name for a drink that you...
No, it's a brand. Well, I mean, half tea, half lemonade is an Arnold Palmer, but this is not an interesting conversation at all. But yes, it's a brand. Hello, Adam.
Well, I just wanted to know. I thought it was maybe like you were trying to attribute some sort of quality.
No,
to
honestly, I like homemade iced tea the best. It's always the best. And I think I've talked about this before in the Bungies podcast about how great iced tea is.
Yeah, but of course we
have. The problem is if I make it myself, I'll drink literally half a gallon in a day, which is not healthy. So I've been buying Honest Tea, which is fairly close to homemade iced tea, but I drink one bottle a day.
Honest tea sounds like a horrible euphemism. Like it's really just
it
like
does. It really
it's
does.
Like water that people drink out of a paper bag. That's, you know.
Honestly, I think they're going for like the whole hippy dippy Ben and Jerry's kind of thing. What's the other one? Ben and Jerry, Tom and Tom, the juice guys. I think they're kind of going for that shway, you know, chic downtown or urbane city thing. But really, you can just get it at the supermarket, and it's actually pretty cheap, but it's tasty.
All right.
That's why I'm drinking tea as well, so I'm not very exciting. So
that is the voice of Nikki, the host of Everything in the Kitchen Sink, a podcast that is broadcast out of Toronto, Ontario, who's been on this show before, and we've been on her show where we talked about The Clash a lot, but we wanted
which
to
was
to
amazing. That. Now that I have both of you here, I'm just going to hijack your whole entire podcast for 2 seconds and thank you for you guys humoring me and coming on that show, because I have gotten such an amazing response about that show being apparently, I don't know, it's like the best Joe Strummer special I've done. And considering I do 2 a year and I've been doing it for almost 4 years, that says something to you guys, right?
Well, that's what you get.
Give you guys a round of applause.
That's what you get when you call them the Punk News crew. We're the A-team, Nikki. We don't fool around.
I know. I love you guys. I can't wait to have you guys on my show again.
We're very pro here at Punk News. We're extremely pro.
Slightly more pro than me. I don't know what that means. I'm just going to drink my tea.
All right. So if you want to find Nikki's show, you can go onto iTunes, of course, and search for Everything in the Kitchen Sink, or you could go to eatks.net, eatks.net, and we'll put the link in the show notes for this show. I guess I should mention this because I've been doing it for like a month. We have show notes now. So
I noticed that. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is because I'm like, how can I make this into slightly more work? So
I know, now, right? Because show notes are more work.
It is. So with the remember things and then write them down. Every time we post the show, which now goes up on Sunday night, there is an article that goes on punknews.org. If you go to that article and click the little read more thing where you can see the whole article, you can get links for all the stuff that we talk about during the show. And that's both the stories we talk about, the bands that we play, and anything else that happens to pop up that I think is worth linking. So we're trying to make those more interesting and expand those as we go. But anyways, you can find the links to Nikki's show in the show notes, which will be up on Punk News. I guess by the time someone listens to this, it'll be this past Sunday or this Sunday.
You're not supposed to date a podcast.
Time is hard.
You're not supposed to date a podcast.
We record one every week. they're dated. It's about news. It can't not be dated. But, okay. I don't really care about any of the things
that happened
this
week. That's okay, because you guys work 1,000 times harder than I do. I'm lucky if I put out 2 podcasts a month. So kudos to you guys, because I don't know how you guys do it.
Yeah, we just turn on this like fire hose of shit that we have and don't really pay a lot of attention to the quality. And just
I love it. I love
we'll
it.
Drown our critics.
No, but it's quality. Don't sell your guys' Don't sell yourself short.
That really is the pun youth ethos. Like no matter how much people criticize us, we just drown them in quantity. You know what I mean?
You know what? That's fucking punk rock, man. Because you know what's punk rock? No rules. That's
true.
What's punk rock.
That's true.
Okay, now before anything, I got to talk about Twitter with you, Nikki.
I know. apparently,
because I don't quite understand this, and this is every once in a while, and this might be like I'm aging, so I don't get it anymore. But I hit something on the internet where I'm not sure if it's a joke or not, and it might be a joke, but I don't know if I'm trying to be clever by reading into it. So both you and I, mainly you, have had some Twitter interactions over the past week or so on the Twitter there with a Mr. Purportedly a Mr. Topperheaden and a Mr. Mick Jones.
Yes.
Now, there is nothing about Topperheaden or Mick Jones on Twitter that makes either of those people necessarily the actual people. They have low numbers of followers. They don't have the little official Twitter checkmarky thing. And what makes me really ask if this is the real people is they're so fucking weird.
Okay.
Weird.
They're weird.
I'm going to defend several parts of this. And the reason why is because if anybody's ever followed me on Twitter, and I'm just going to shit out my Twitter handle, it's at eatks.net. I actually went and challenged them because I'm that kind of guy, because apparently somebody needed to challenge them. So anyways, I followed them because somebody else, Strummerfest, had followed them, and they said that they were the real deal. And then I went fisticuffs, well, metaphorically fisticuffs. And I'm like, okay, if you're not really the real deal, I will eat you alive on Twitter and I will shame you on Twitter because that's what I'm good at. And they're like, no, we're the real deal. And I'm like, okay, so I'm going to pretend maybe they are and we'll see where it goes. And then I realized that, you know, musicians themselves, depending, like how we see musicians from 2000 and the 1990s is a very different breed from the 1980s and the 1970s. They're not media savvy. They're not meant to be media savvy. They're musicians. They're not socialites. They're not social media fucking gurus. So for them to be very awkward kind of makes sense. Now, I'll tell you a funny story. So I went and, like, I was excited because, I mean, Topper followed me and that was great. But, like, Mick Jones was like my... If I could be followed by somebody that was besides Joe Strummer, it would be fucking Mick Jones. So I just lost my shit when Mick Jones followed me. And I got some slack on like the Facebook for it. And people are like, well, he's not real. And I'm like, well, okay, well, maybe he is, maybe he isn't. I don't know. I'm going to challenge him and we'll see what happens. Funny thing is that both of them follow me now and I've actually been DMing them. And I went and I challenged them and I'm like, well, you know what? Nobody believes who you are because Twitter, there's so many fakes. And so what I'm going to propose to you is to come on to my podcast to prove who you are. And so Topper said yes. And Mick, I've been talking to him via DM and he's a little bit more, he's a very closed off person. And I don't discount that. I don't think it's fake. I think it's the fact is that it's a new territory for them and they just don't know what to do with this shit. And I don't think that that's wrong. So I've talked to them and I'm like, don't be the jerks, don't be the assholes. And if anybody goes and tells you that you're, you know, fakes, I'll be the one to go in and fight to be the asshole for you because I don't care. However, you've got a reputation to hold. I don't. And that seems to work out. So potentially this is what's happened is that Topper is going to come on my podcast in September and hopefully Mick will come along. He's kind of got some busy stuff and he's not in his country right now. And that's all I'm going to say. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But the fact of the matter is I'm DMing with these guys and they're like willing to come on the podcast. I can't see that they're fakes because if you're going to go to that much effort to continue on a fake account, you got some serious issues. That's how I see it, so I don't know.
Such an interesting and ultimate troll, though. The topper account is like an art project. It's amazing.
But you know what? It's weird. They're so quirky because they follow the weirdest accounts, but then we don't know. Like, we know a musician based on a musician. We don't know their personal life. So, like, for instance, I don't know. Did you know that Mick Jones's daughter was actually in several bands? Did you know that?
That I did not.
No. So this is what I'm saying. What we know, and then that Mick Jones's daughter actually helped facilitate it, because I talked to you guys about it and I was so stoked about this. So Mick Jones has a new album out, and I'm just going to get all weird on you, and I'm sorry. Anyways, Mick Jones has a new album out, and the thing is that it's only 1,000 copies worldwide released, like pressed. And
this then is the instrumental only, one, right?
Yeah. And then you laughed at me. You're like, oh, Nikki, it's like kind of elevator music. But there's a reason why. And I'm going to tell you why, Adam. So the reason why it's instrumental is because what it's doing is that it's background music in a rock and roll museum in Venice, Italy. That's why. So that makes all the sense in the world. Like, because why would you want fucking lyrics in the background when you're going and perusing a rock and roll museum in Venice, Italy? No, you would want something to be a soundtrack. You would want something to be an instrumental. So anyways, the story goes is it was a very, very expensive vinyl for me to get. It's crazy because pounds versus Canadian dollars is stupid. But I got the signed one, which I was stupidly excited about. Where was I going on this tangent? Because I got so fucking excited about it. I have no idea. Anyways.
So here's what I want to know.
What do you want to know?
Do you have some sort of like a Voight-Kampff test that you are going to administer to them?
Oh, no. I'm going to do video.
Oh, okay. Well, that'll do it.
That's boring. What are you kidding? So like what I'm going to do is first is I'm going to acknowledge by video via Skype. Now, hopefully they won't listen to this show because like they'll know my tell. I don't know if I want to plug the show now. So what my whole point is that because they said, Topper had said, do you want to do a video or do you want to do a podcast? The fact that somebody had asked that right then and there means that it's the real deal. Like I can't see them not being, I just think that they're very awkward people. And I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing. It's like, we're not finding Twitter awkward because we've been on it for fucking 4 years. They've only been on it for 3 months. I mean, they're in their 60s. It's going to be horrible. I don't want to be ageism.
There are so many ways that this could blow up in a hilarious way once you get them on video. But it's going to happen.
I'm sorry?
I said, there's so many ways this could blow up in a hilarious way once that video starts.
It's going to blow up all bad. So, but the thing is that, I mean, for them to, I've already threatened them. I mean, really, I've publicly threatened them already on Twitter. So, I mean, for them to decide, okay, we're going to keep on doing this, they're kind of dumb as rocks. So,
I like that you, as the biggest Clash fan that I know, found your chance to interact with them. By basis of threatening them on Twitter.
That's delightful.
It's like, I finally get to talk to these people. I'm going to threaten them.
I'm going to threaten and challenge them because that's the punk rock way, right? So, I mean, really, I mean, if you think about it, it makes total legit sense. I mean, everybody's just jealous that they didn't think of it first. So, okay, come on, Adam. Like, seriously.
To our listeners, these two accounts are at Mick J Official. And at T Hedden Official. So yes. There you go.
What if it really was Mick Jones, but it's the foreigner Mick Jones, not the Clash Mick Jones?
But you know what? I don't think people understand how hard it is to actually get a verification from Twitter. Do you know that to get a verification from Twitter that you have to apply for it and then you have to be approved by Twitter? So it's not necessarily that you've deemed yourself, hey, I am who I am. No, you have to be actually a celebrity and you have to be in contention with fake profiles in order to actually get a verification. Did you know that?
I did know that actually. And actually the Danzig Twitter, I think it's fake even though it's certified or whatever. Like I think Glenn Danzig...
What? No. There's a difference. You can be certified and your management can hold it.
No, I'm saying he's got a blue check mark and somebody tweets from it.
Yeah.
But I'm almost sure it's not Danzig.
No, but it probably isn't. It's probably his management. But it doesn't
matter. I don't think it is. I think it's a parody, and no one knows.
You think it's a parody that got a verified account?
I'm pretty sure it is, yeah.
Nice.
Now the part of this that I'm having a hard time really working with is that, like, why would you make a parody account for Topper Hedden? Like, it's a pretty weird place to go for a joke. But
Adam, have you seen the Troll to Punk News?
You know how many...
Well, yeah, I guess, but like, wouldn't you try something that has a little bit of a wider audience? I don't know. It is incredibly interesting to me. But anyways, I guess we'll
you know
get
what?
Off.
Actually, there's tons of Mick Jones and there's tons of Joe Strummer out there. Tons. Fucking go, Adam. Go and search. Just go. Humor me one time.
Not to besmirch the good Topper Hedden here, but him and Joe have a different public profile level. Like, it's a weird.
Absolutely. No, I see what you're saying, and it's really interesting. Like, I've had talks. I've gotten information from, and I can't say because that there's, I don't know, there's some kind of like journalistic integrity or something, whatever. Anyways, but I've had talks with Topper in DM and he's told me information about Mick Jones and stuff like that, that probably isn't privy to a lot of people. And it's
like
been
a secret birthmark.
Not a secret, like things, just things. And I'm just going to put it that way. So it's like, why would you tell me that, and why would it be confirmed from somebody else? Now, unless these two buddies are playing,
it's a long con.
You play Mick Jones, because that has been done before.
This is some kid's project in like art school.
You really think so? I don't know.
I can't wait to find out.
I will eat them alive, and I can't wait. I can't wait. I will hunt them down. I will.
All right. Before we get to the news, Nikki, why don't you play a song? Tell people what we're going to listen to here.
Okay. So just recently, when was it? Last week, I went and I interviewed, and it was a horrible interview because I don't do interviews very well. I interviewed a band called The Palatines, and they are just coming in from doing North by Northeast, and they're from Vancouver. And it just became a mayhem and nonsense of an interview. We just ended up giggling, making fun of people. I don't even think that constitutes an interview. But anyways, it's going to be hilarious when it's on the podcast. But I love this band so much. I figured I'd play a track from them because they're going to have a new album coming out in August. So we're going to have The Ballantines with a track called Sickos.
I never see you or your tattoos again. Tell everyone I meet that you were super sweet and a perfect 10. Oh, would you hold my hand? Would you hold my hand? Would you be my half and not my other man? Oh, baby, please.
Oh, baby, please.
Stay sick with me. Oh,
Okay, we're back. And that was the song Sickos by the Valentines with a V?
Valentines, not Valentines, Valentines with a B.
With a B. Oh, all right.
With a B.
That's why I couldn't find them when I was looking for it. All right. Anyways, words are hard. Okay.
Words are hard. So, reading this is really hard.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to hop back on a story that John and I were arguing about last week because some shit happened with regards to this story. And, there's new information here. Things have changed. So, Apple again. We all know who drew what line in the sand last week on this between John and myself. If I recall correctly, I'm a lavished devotee of the cult, and John is a freedom fighter battling for what?
For truth, justice, and the American way. And actually, Adam, I was going to make
I haven't, I didn't catch up on this podcast, so you need to fill me in a little bit before I set myself in the ring here.
John thinks that Apple is unequivocal evil, and
I do.
I took like a nuanced middle stand on this, but anyways, stuff has changed.
I don't even mean that just to be outrageous. I actually think Apple is sinister.
Okay, so if there's one thing that could make Apple turn from their sinister decisions, it is pop songstress Taylor Swift, apparently. So recently, Taylor Swift penned an open letter to Apple regarding the plans that they had for the release of their Apple Music service. Now, Apple Music had planned to give users of the service 3 months free without having to pay any subscription or anything like that. However, during that time, they had planned to not pay any royalties to the bands that were being streamed by those people during their free trial periods. So in her letter, Swift criticized Apple for this decision and stated that she would not have her records on the service. She stated, and this is a quote, "I'm sure that you were aware that Apple Music will be offering a free month trial to anyone who signs up for the service. I'm not sure that you know that Apple Music will not be paying the writers, producers, or artists for those 3 months. I find it to be shocking, disappointing, and completely unlike this historically progressive and generous company," end quote. You can find the whole letter, the link to it on Punk News there. This was not just criticism that came from T-Swift. It came from all over the place. Beggars Group did a really public one that they put out. A lot of various artists have voiced into it on Twitter. So following Swift's open letter, which given her fan base and profile got a lot of people talking, a lot of eyeballs on it and all that, Apple changed their policies for the service publicly. In a brief Twitter dispatch, Apple senior executive Eddie Q stated that Apple Music will pay artists for streaming even during the customer's free trial period. So, that looks like a reversal of what they were going to do there. There are, and Nikki, you were saying this before we started recording, there are like 10 ways that we can approach this. And it can go,
we can get real messy fast.
What the fuck is up with this original policy? We could talk about, you know, why does it take Taylor Swift to make this happen? We could talk about Taylor Swift's ability to, you know, make the world change.
Let's not go that route.
The tweet that I saw from someone was like, "Taylor, now do gun control." So anyways, John, this is your bailiwick. I'm going to throw this to you.
And we'll wing it from there.
I'm not going to weigh in on this one just yet. So, John, how do we approach this story? What do you want to do with it?
I have two avenues of attack and one avenue of explanation. Should I do a brief explanation of how Apple is allowed to do this to begin with?
I don't know, because, I mean, really, wouldn't it be any – is it any different than how Spotify does it?
Quite a bit.
And how Pandora does it? How is it any different?
Well, I'll explain it very briefly. Okay, a copyright is a bundle of rights associated with a work of authorship. In this case, it's a sound recording and also underlying song composition. If you write a song, if you record a song, you have the exclusive right to distribute, to – perform publicly and to do other things with it, to make derivative works of that copyright. So how can Apple Music have any songs under its thing at all? The answer is when artists sign up for distributors, that is basically when artists sign up to get their music on iTunes, when they sign up to get it on Spotify, when they sign up to get stuff on RDO, what they do is they don't actually do it directly. They actually go to licensing services. Then these licensing services basically license the song recording to all these different services. So the way Apple Music gets the right to play, say, a Clash tune is the Clash hired a licensing service, and that licensing service licensed the music to Apple Music. But actually, there's probably about six or seven other middlemen along the way. That's why bands are always so surprised as to how their music gets onto places that they don't even know about. That's how it happens. So it basically, originally, Apple Music had a three-month trial period where bands didn't get played. Bands on Apple Music, which is basically most bands, actually had technically agreed to that through their various licensing contracts. So they were legally allowed to do it, but I guess people thought they were playing unfair. So let's get to the real meat of the discussion. First of all, as much as Adam White thinks Apple is a bunch of bunnies and kittens and the most wonderful thing ever, Apple sucks, Apple is devious, and Apple is, quite frankly, hypocritical. Apple is one of the fiercest defenders and most aggressive parties when it comes to patent protection, as they should be. Apple has developed a lot of different things. You can agree with how sinister or not they are, but the fact is they've created intellectual property. They are entitled to defend it. How interesting is it that Apple, that wants to defend its own IP, basically wants to use its large leverage in the marketplace to basically walk all over everyone else's IP and devalue the artist. And that's what we're seeing here, is Apple has been doing this since iTunes began. Apple is basically trying to increase the value of the middleman and decrease the value of the source. We've seen this since the beginning of iTunes. And the reason Apple does that is Apple's a distributor. Apple's a distributor, and Apple doesn't actually create any content themselves. So that's why Apple is despicable, in my opinion. So let's move on to Taylor Swift. I think Taylor Swift is great. Not a huge fan of her music. I don't hate her music. I don't like her music. I really don't care about Taylor Swift's music. But I commend Taylor Swift 100% for taking a stand where so many other artists just bend over and say, okay, Apple, do whatever you want, including the Beatles, including Elvis, including The Clash, including Beyonce. They all said, Apple, you can do whatever you want with our IP. We're large people. We're large artists, so we'll get a good chunk of change. You can do what you want. We don't really care about anybody else. Whereas Taylor Swift said, my music has value. Recorded music has value. I realize that I am a key shareholder or stakeholder in the music that people want. A lot of people want Taylor Swift music. So, in effect, Taylor Swift gambled and she won, and I respect her for that. Taylor Swift said, Apple, you will not continue this trend of devaluing the artist's input. You will pay me what I'm entitled to, even though I think really the royalty rate is way, way, way low. And Apple caved because they realized how powerful of a force Taylor Swift is. People are like, oh, well, you know, Taylor Swift sucks. Beyonce is much more interesting. I didn't say Beyonce doing this. I saw Beyonce just saying, do whatever you want. What this is,
well, Beyonce has a vested interest in her own competing service too. So,
well, then you would think she'd want to attack even more, you know.
Well, it's weirder waters for her to wade into. But keep going.
If you have a vested interest, that's another topic for another podcast, right?
I'm building to my point. People are attacking. Well, actually, if you notice, a lot of bands, even like, you know, Tank Crimes Records, which I'm a big fan of that record label, they were pro Taylor Swift. Alternative Tentacles, Della Biafras, they were pro Taylor Swift doing this. A lot of the fans were like, shut up, Taylor Swift. You're only doing this to protect yourself and your own self.
You know what? I think a lot of people also misunderstand also that Taylor Swift is also from an independent label as well. Like, she might be very, very big, but she's just on an independent label. She's not on a big label like Beyonce is. Which also may perhaps, I'm going to play devil's advocate, may make it a lot easier for her to perhaps speak her mind. I'm just going to throw that out there.
It very well may. So basically what I was saying is, of course Taylor Swift's acting in her own interest. Of course she's not acting 100% altruistically. But the fact is what she's doing, a lot of independent artists will reap the benefit of, including Beggar's Banquet. She didn't have to do this. She could have cut her own private deal with Apple, which a lot of other artists do, but instead she took to
– No, she didn't have to. And this is what people don't – you know what, John? That's right. That's exactly what it is. And I'm really getting pissed off about a lot of musicians saying, you know what, she did this as a PR stunt. Fuck you. Because you know what? She didn't have to do this. She didn't have to go and you know what? If it was a PR stunt – first of all, it wouldn't have been an open letter on her Tumblr. It would have been on Pitchfork. It would have been on some kind of media. There would have been a media brouhaha. But the problem is that because Taylor Swift is so popular, it doesn't matter what she writes. It's on her Tumblr. boom, it becomes media. It becomes a media frenzy. So if you're going to blame anybody for it being a PR stunt or media frenzy, then you blame the media, because she posted it out on her Tumblr. She could have easily went and did an interview with somebody if she wanted to be. To me, if you're going to make it a PR stunt, why wouldn't you have done it a real PR stunt? Why would you just not post it on your Tumblr, unless she realizes how much power she has and realizes that, you know, just putting it on her Tumblr is enough effort for people to go and lap up and then go and just disperse into the masses. And I think that says more about media than it does about her. I don't know. Am I crazy on thinking that?
I don't think it's a PR stunt at all, because she's expressed his opinion about a year ago and before that. It's basically
she did on Spotify. I mean, like, it's no different, right? So
I mean, basically, it's one of two things: it's Taylor Swift protecting her financial interests, or it's Taylor Swift taking the more altruistic view and protecting the rights of the artist. I think it's probably both. I think she's definitely protecting her own financial interests, but you know
it's
what?
Both. She's super.
Yeah, people are attacking Taylor Swift because she's inoffensive, she's not scary, and, you know, her music isn't necessarily that deep necessarily. But she's a popular artist in the pop realm, making an important statement that protects the rights of artists, and that's to be commended, and I hope we see other artists doing that as opposed to convenience winning out. So that's why I think Taylor Swift is great in regards to that, and the more people hate her, the more I like her. So I totally support Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift's 100% right with this.
You want my rebuttal?
Yeah, I do.
I don't actually disagree with you. I agree with you 100%.
Okay, Adam, you got two people.
Adam, this is like the Pacquiao Mayweather fight. People were like building up to this all week. It's like, oh, John and Adam are going to duke it out over Taylor Swift, and we shake hands instead.
No, because, I mean, here's the thing. Two things. Like, I'll get to Swift in a second. Let's talk about Apple for a minute here. And this is not an opinion that is one that I'm cooking up on my own here. A lot of the people that I've seen that are like the Apple Watcher people that blog about this shit that kind of exist in the tech sphere have kind of voiced this opinion, is that of that whole keynote that they did, out of all the announcements that they did, the Apple Music announcement was weird. And well, I mean, we had a hard time on the episode last week trying to even like define the bounds of it. I was going on for a while about iTunes Match and how it compares to that and all this shit. And they've announced something in a very confusing way, in a way that sounds almost like Apple themselves didn't really have their shit together with what this service is supposed to be. And I think that this policy that's blown up in their face is kind of part and parcel with that. Like, this whole thing does not seem like it was, you know, like ready to be out of the secret Apple labs and into the public, because anyone should have been able to predict the backlash that not paying artists for 3 months would cause, especially given the fact that Apple in the past has, you know, at least put on the air of being such an artist friendly endeavor. Right. So even before they got into music, that was their whole thing, is like who used Apple products back when everyone was using Windows products. It was graphics designers and photographers. It was artists. Right. That's a whole part of their brand thing. So the fact that they did this without realizing that this was going to blow up and become such a public shit show is weird. Something happened there. Something didn't. You know, someone didn't do their homework. Someone didn't, think this thing through. So I absolutely agree that the policy was dumb. And, you know, I mean, our overall opinions on whether streaming music is useful or not to society aside, the policy was stupid. So it's good that they reversed it. The Taylor Swift thing, yeah, I'm on board with you there. I think that, you know, she was right to say what she said, and I don't think it was a PR stunt. I actually think a lot of the criticism that you see of her smacks of both like ageism and sexism. Like, if that same statement came from someone that everyone is like mutually agreed gets to have this elder statesman role, no one would have questioned it. Like,
if
Tom York from Radiohead if he made this,
good example, Adam. I think you nailed
that's a
that
really
example.
Good example,
right? Like, if so, or the takes
actually,
younger.
That's a very important example.
Isn't his name Thom? What's his name?
I think it's Tom, Thom. Tom.
What's the guy from Coldplay, or even him, right? What about Bono? Where's Bono in this?
Bono. No. Bono doesn't get the top. Well, Bono, it's okay. It's easy to dismiss Bono.
Come on.
Bono would be interesting.
Come on.
Bono would be interesting because of how buddy-buddy he's been with Apple.
I know, right?
Right?
That would have been
to take someone from the indie rock world, right, who people actually respect as like an artist. Like, so the what's his name? Justin Vernon from Bon Iver, if he made this statement. If Wynn Butler from the Arcade Fire made this statement.
Sure.
Right. Or if someone that says anyone is sort of agreed is like a good guy. Right. If
Billy Bragg, which is very
Billy Bragg, of course. But let's say
make a segue.
Vernon Reed.
Billy Bragg did the exact opposite, which I'm really surprised. So.
No. If Dave Grohl. Mm. Right.
Yes. Right.
If any of those guys made this statement, yeah, no one would question whether it was a fake thing or whether they should just shut up. No one would question their sincerity or whether they were qualified to make a discussion about this or to make demands or anything like that, right? Everyone would just be like, oh, those are just artists, like respect, you know, they're respecting their thing.
Respect
they know their
our,
shit,
our,
right?
Artistry and stuff.
So the fact that it was Taylor Swift, I think it has caught a lot of people off guard because that's forcing you a little bit to go and take this person that you're dismissing and say, oh, okay, like, do they actually get to have a valid voice on this, or am I just dismissing them because they're, you know, because they're young and female and people who I don't like listen to them, right?
Yeah, they're young and female and not the specific genre that I like to listen to, right?
Yeah, I mean, so they're a pop musician. They play vapid music, right? They don't get to, you know, like let the big boys have this discussion, and you go back and to your MTV awards. Like, there's a lot of that I'm seeing in the criticism of it,
yeah.
And that's kind of shitty. So yeah. So John, we're in agreement. This is a dumb policy, and the response to it from Taylor, at least, we're on board with. That's cool.
You know what the funny thing is that the response, that even though the three of us are on board with her response and stuff like that, I find it very interesting because everybody's kind of on board with her response. However, they're very cynic about it. And like you've said before, they're like, they can't take it for what it's worth, that something good came out of it. Like, I'm sorry, I don't care. Like, even if it was, even if there was a small perchance that it was a PR stunt, who gives a fuck? Because you know what? She just went and changed everything for every artist. So every artist owes her an apology. I'm sorry. That's how I feel. Every indie artist, everybody that has an iTunes on there that slagged her, that's it. I'm sorry, you can't do that because she has singularly done what nobody else did who wanted complaint and whined and kvetched about it, and she accomplished it. So everybody's
now the sad part to this is what Taylor Swift has enabled is for all those people to get their 14 cents of of streaming revenue.
Now when we get down to the numbers of it.
Yeah. Okay. So that's, I don't really want to go there because
of it, right. There's the principle of it. And then there's the actual numbers.
Yeah. So let's not get into the whole streaming discussion because we've done that a bunch of times.
Oh, God, it's so awesome.
John, your friend and mine, posted his statement the other day. Who was it there? Do I have the statement in front of me?
You have statements in front of you?
No, Joel Tannenbaum. He posted it to Facebook. Did he not?
Oh, maybe. Let me pull it up real quick. I don't know if I actually saw that or not.
Was it Joel? It was spectacular. Hold on. Let me find
it. Might
have
been Baldy Long Hair. I know he did something, but let me look. In case the listeners don't know, Joel Tannenbaum, he's the guy from Plow United, the guy from X Friends, the guy from the Rentiers. We have him on the podcast a lot because he's a cool.
Yeah. Okay. So Joel Tannenbaum posted. Oh, he only shared it with Joel's friends. I guess that's us. So he posted his his U.S. performances, internet audio royalties.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, where from, let's see here. What does he got? From Pandora, he made a cent. From Rhapsody, he made 2 cents. From Spotify, he made 75 cents. From YouTube,
from Spotify, he made 75 cents?
3 cents.
So Joel Tannenbaum makes 81 cents every 3 months through his streaming.
No. But we also have to, but you know what? We also have to, if you're going to say that, not just every 4 months, you need to explain to the listeners how many listens and how many plays that actually equates to. Because otherwise, those numbers are like, oh, 80, You know, that's like a cup of coffee every four months. It's not bad. But the amount of listens that's required to make that is astronomical.
Oh yeah, so from Pandora. I know I think that what happens here is that this is a roundup on a lot of it. So when you get 1 cent, it's because you had anything and they've rounded up to 1 cent. So for Pandora, someone played song Plow Beach 471 times, so he made a cent. From let's see here, what's the top one that he's got here? From Spotify, the top played song called
Adam.
Yeah.
Just let me interject for 1 second here. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to interject for 1 second. You said 471, right?
Yeah.
And it was 1 cent for 471 listens. Now I'm going to tell you a funny story. Now, can you imagine if they actually had to pay, God forbid, if they had to pay $1 for that track? Right? That would be $471 into the artist's pocket versus 1 cent for 471 listens. Yeah. Okay.
So that was 1,313 listens of the song Spindle.
That's Plow United's big hit.
Big hit from the song Spindle. This is on Spotify. He got 26 cents.
I don't mean to laugh because like it's a very horrible, but it's just, that's a lot of listens for such a, can you buy gummy bears with that kind of money anymore?
All I'm saying is Steve Jobs wants to cut Joel out of his quarter.
So anyways, we won't get into royalties because we could be on that all day. And I don't
we
really
could
have
be on that all day.
And we can't solve that problem right now. Yeah. But anyways, on the T-Swift file, I guess we're cool. But I mean, so here's kind of where I wanted to go with that thought, though, about how it's weird that they even came to this. You take like the Steve Jobs era of Apple, and Steve Jobs being a control freak and
slapping people and cutting out all of Apple's donation based programs.
Yeah.
Who's not looking so bad now? Bill Gates, who's ending malaria in Africa, and everyone made fun of the poor guy's haircut in the 90s. Who's laughing now? Bill Gates.
But listen. So when Jobs was ruling with an iron fist here, the one thing that you can give to him is that he very rarely had something that blew up in public. And if it did blow up in public, people got raked over the coals. The one that's like the famous one was way back before there was iCloud, they had a service, I think it was called Mobile Me or something like that. Anyways, it was some sort of online email and documents thing, some cloud thing. They announced it, and from day one when they announced it, it did not work properly, and it was just a shitty thing. And this was back during kind of like early days of the iPhone, the height of the iPod. This was when like everything that Apple was doing was really hot shit to everyone. And they announced this online service, and it was just a dog. Well, apparently Jobs marched like 150 people or something into his lair and just tore people's spines out and beat them with it. It was incredible.
Quite the picture that you're painting.
Yes. Like he just eviscerated people over this because their whole brand is that they're doing something that costs more because it's more finished, right? Like that they're given quality shit where you're just buying the plastic crap from everyone else. So to have something like that blow up was very un-Apple. And it's still a very kind of like un-Apple thing to happen. So the fact that like it got to the point where this whole system got the music thing was announced at all in sort of like the weird dog's breakfast of a system that it is. And then that it was announced and had this like poison pill of like an artist unfriendly clause attached to it. And no one at Apple thought to like stop and say like, yo, we can't announce that because it's going to blow up. The fact that it got to Taylor Swift to get the blowback is odd. And that's just kind of where I wanted to leave that. It's weird.
So what you're saying is Apple is less calculating and sinister than it used to be.
I want to say,
you know what?
Fucked up.
You know, yeah, you know what? I'm going to have to agree on that. I don't know if I'd necessarily say calculating and sinister. However, I could say probably that they're very not very thorough anymore. Because, I mean, really, I think if Jobs was around, T's would have been crossed and I's would have been dotted in that circumstance so that nobody would have messed about.
And that's what's weird. I mean, shit, let's go with John's analogy here. They're sinister and evil. If Dr. Doom was to announce a music service, Dr. Doom's music service, if it was to be artist unfriendly, that would be the point. And you would know it right at the start. It wouldn't be something where like they would announce it and then people would like, hey, wait a minute. This isn't any good. No, man, Dr. Doom would be on top of that shit.
You know, what's weird is I don't hate Steve Jobs. I really, really don't like Steve Jobs. And then believe, like 3 days ago, I saw a picture of him. It was quoted like the last picture of Steve Jobs when he was dying of cancer. And he looked like really, really, really bad in that picture. And I felt sorry for him, even though I had to step back from my hate just a little bit when I saw, I guess, that even Steve Jobs suffered from human ailments, if you will. But speaking of weird things, man, this is weird. Dez Kadena is no longer in the Misfits. And of course, as you all know, Dez Kadena joined the new Misfits. As opposed to the new Misfits that had Michael Graves and Jerry Only, or the original Misfits.
So not the not Misfits 2.0, but Misfits 2.0.
Misfits 3.5. I mean, I think you can roughly 3.0. Divide the Misfits into four now, actually.
You really could, actually.
Original Misfits, yeah. New Misfits with Michael Graves, then Jerry Only, Dez Kadena, and either Marky Ramone or Robo or Eric Archie. But now Dez Kadena's not even in the band.
Yeah, it's so all now, a big mess now. I don't know. I don't know.
So now the Misfits are Jerry Only's son and Eric Archie. Here's what Dez Kadena said. His Facebook message was really weird. He said, "Folks, I'm not with the Misfits anymore. This is what I do for a living now. Sorry if you were expecting to see me in California for the last show. All the best to the band and Fiends. Carry on." It was weird because he didn't have like an old-timey picture of a baseball player. I think what he's saying, he's watching baseball now. I'm not even sure. So I guess it doesn't look like there's any bad blood.
So is he saying he's into baseball? Is he too old to be – like he's too old to be drafted for baseball, isn't he?
No, he's a baseball maniac though. Like he watches baseball all the time.
Okay.
Notably, in March he had a malignant neoplasm from his larynx removed and he couldn't sing after that, but he could talk. I don't know if he can sing now. So I don't know if it's health reasons or other reasons that he's left the Misfits. It looks like they're on good terms, but you know who knows for sure.
It's still left pretty ambiguous, though.
Nikki, are the Misfits worth seeing now with Jerry Only's son and Eric Archie? Is there something to be had there, or is there not?
Are you asking? No. No. I mean, I guess... See, the thing is that when it comes to certain bands, I think what they do is they kind of ride the coattails of nostalgia. And not necessarily is that entirely a bad thing, because what they do is they try to brand a legacy of some kind of sorts, of some kind of nonsense. However, I the problem is that not the newer fans are going to take into consideration the wonderful history or the colorful history that goes along with the band. So, yeah, I say no. When the Misfits were starting to retour without Danzig, I didn't go see them. So whatever.
Yeah. The crazy thing is that Dez was in the Misfits like more than three times as long as he was ever in Black Flag. Like
Dez is the second longest serving Misfit.
Like he was in the Misfits from what was it 2001?
He was in the Misfits longer than Danzig. He was in the Misfits from 2001 till 2015.
Which is funny.
He was in the Misfits.
So you think that he'd have a bigger title?
He was in the Misfits for longer, twice plus longer than Danzig.
Yeah, he served time, man. He served time.
Which is. That's such a weird thing to think about when you think about someone's legacy. Is that like the band that you were in when you were, you know, basically like a shitty teenager for 3 or 4 years, way outweighs everything else on your resume, including the thing that you've been doing for the past 15 years.
Isn't that crazy?
As an adult. Like that's so crazy.
It's music world for you. It's messed up. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, look at the Doors, for instance, and like look at NXS and look at the Queen, right? I mean, they've had really good, successful bouts, and then they end up with lead singers. And does anybody really care?
Well, I mean, in a way, it's almost like people like they talk about John Lydon. They only talk about the Sex Pistols, but he's like releasing albums as Pill for like 20 years. Right? Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, but I think Lydon gets respect from
Lydon gets respect, but, you know, he does anything. It's like Sex Pistols, John Lydon. Like, God, if every time they introduced you, John, if it was like, you know, Abraham Lincoln middle school student, John.
Oh, Adam, why are you not segueing this to like Joe Strummer? It's the same thing. Like, for instance, I'll tell you a funny story. So I have a Joe Strummer tattoo on my arm. And so I will, you know, some people are like, oh, what musician do you have on your arm? And I'm like, I have Joe Strummer. And they're like, who's that? And then I would actually have to say the front man of The Clash for them to get it. I'll just leave that there.
Yeah, I got to say, man, Jerry only is making it harder and harder for me to defend the Misfits. As I've said on the podcast before, when it was Jerry Only, Dez Katina, and Marky Ramone, it was a fun show. Like, it wasn't, quote, the Misfits, but it was three guys from three great bands just doing, like, 50 songs from all those bands. And I got to say, when I went to see the new Misfits, 60 to 70% of the reason I was going was to see Dez and Dez do Black Flag songs. Dez is the man. And actually, Adam, here's just something a lot of people might not know, is Dez has had a couple bands since Black Flag and between the Misfits. The biggest one is DC3, and they have a live album called Vita. And he also had a band called Vita. But DC3 have a live album called Vita where he covers Hawkwind. He covers Boom Boom. Is that John Lee Hooker, and he does some solo stuff, and it is an amazing live album. So you should check out Dez Katina's live album Vita with his DC3. But like,
you know what, John, I'm going to challenge you that, and I'm going to make Adam put that in the show notes so I can remember it, only for my giggles.
Well, there you have it. What I was going to say is Jerry Only is making it hard for me. I mean, like, I'm about to go see the Misfits with the Cro-Mags at This Is Hardcore Fest, and I was going to see the Misfits because Dez was going. I honestly was going to see the Misfits.
You were going to see the Cro-Mags, and it's okay.
No. I mean, I was going for both, but I'm saying the reason to see the Misfits was to see Dez and Jerry Only playing together, which is cool. But now it's going to be Jerry Only's son and Eric Archie covering Earth AD, and. It never really bothered me that they called themselves the Misfits, but now that it's just Jerry Only and two other guys calling themselves the Misfits, doing Glenn Danzig songs, it just, I don't know, man. I think I might have to
It's like too meta for you?
No, it just reeks of desperation, honestly. And I understand that Jerry Only's got a family and he's got to make money.
No, musicians, but you know what? Just because you need to make money and just because you need to do it as a musician doesn't mean that you have to hold on to nostalgia. You can move forward.
Well, maybe he does, though.
Many other bands move forward.
I don't know if anybody – I mean, I don't know if anybody would go see the Jerry Only band. I actually would, but I'm a maniac. I think most – I mean, honestly, as Sublime
was – I don't know. It depends on what it was, right? What depends on what his focus was, you know.
I mean, he's not going to write as good as Danzig. I mean, he's not going to write that good music. You know what I mean? Like, as Sublime with Rome proves – name really does mean so much in music. If you remember, Long Beach Dub All Stars, which essentially is just Sublime with Rome, couldn't even sell a 400 capacity place. Now Sublime with Rome, it's the same exact band, essentially, just with some other guy called Rome. They're doing 20,000-30,000 seat arenas. So the name makes a big difference. So if Jerry Only really is just doing what he can to support his family, I can respect that. I'm not that interested in it. But if he really is just money gouging, which I kind of think he is, because, you know, if you remember, the Misfits put out a Christmas 7-inch, and to get three songs at a minute each, you had to spend $25 for two 7-inches, I thought was pretty lame. So I kind of think it's really the end of the line for the Misfits. I don't really see a point to see them anymore. I mean, I always defended the Misfits no matter what. I think the train's over. I'll make my final decision after I see them doing Earth AD at This Is Hardcore Fest. I'll go with an open mind.
You're gonna give a review or
I don't know if I'll do a review or not because I know the Misfits read it, and I'm not trying to bum out Jerry Only, but I mean, so I don't know if I need to talk shit on Jerry Only. Like,
but it's not. You know what? It's not. See, the thing is that I don't necessarily think that ever you or Adam ever talk shit about a band. What you guys do is you provide a very objective perspective when it comes to certain things, and you give really good examples. And I think if anybody starts knee-jerking, then those people who are knee-jerking tend to take it far too personally and need to get a life.
Well, I mean, honestly...
And that's me saying that, so you can go and come on and bring it. Send me the hate mail, because I don't really care.
My review would be, Jerry only needs to hang it up. That would be my review.
Yeah, and that's fine. And I think that would be acceptable to say.
Know. Like, if he's really doing it to support his family, it's the only option he has, I'm not going to bang on the guy for that. So I'll go see it. I'll go with an open mind, and we'll see how the show is. Maybe it'll be great. I don't know. But, you know, speaking of a guy that's great, Adam White, do you know why today is perhaps the holiest of all days of the year? Nikki, do you know why today is perhaps the holiest of all days of the year?
I do.
And why is that, Nikki?
Because it's Glenn Danzig's 60th birthday.
That's right. Today, Glenn Danzig.
Can you believe he's 60 years old?
He doesn't look it. He looks about 45 to me.
He bathes in children's blood, right? So.
Indeed. And I got to say, thank God or thank Satan or whoever's appropriate for giving us 6 decades of Danzig. Who I really do think is perhaps the greatest song composer of all time. And I'm not trying to be outrageous. I mean,
wow. I'm a little outrageous, John, but I love you for your outrageousness.
If you read Danzig's lyrics, he's able to go from the abstract, ethereal, you have no idea what he's talking about, to the extremely specific, skewed viewpoint within one line. I think Danzig is as amazing as it gets. So let's play a song.
You read Danzig's lyrics, Ben, because I love you. I love you so much, John, but I'm just not seeing it.
Well, then maybe this will change your mind.
On that. I do appreciate Danzig, though. So
it's Danzig's 60th birthday, you know, and the big milestone's birthday. It's always a good time to look back. So let's look at Danzig looking at his own influences. Not a lot of people know this. Danzig covered David Bowie once, and Danzig is a David Bowie fan. He covered Bowie's Cat People Putting Out Fire from the 1984 Let's Dance album, and I think that's cool because it's a very – unexpected song to cover by Bowie, and it's an unexpected cover for Danzig to do. So this is Danzig doing Cat People Putting Out Fire off the off his double disc compilation, Rare, The Lost Tracks of Danzig.
That's crazy.
Oh,
And we are back. Adam Whiteman, do we want to talk about Courtney Love or do we want to talk about Neil Young? What do we want to talk about?
I always want to talk about Neil Young.
Let's talk about Neil Young. So listen, Adam White's favorite guy. I like him too. I like him a lot. As you guys know, Donald Trump announced his candidacy for presidency, which is kind of ridiculous. During his candidacy announcement, he's been playing Neil Young's Rocking in the Free World, and I doubt he's ever read the lyrics because it's got really depressing lyrics. So Neil Young, who's Canadian and wrote the song, he got kind of bummed out about it, and here's what Neil Young said. Donald Trump was not authorized to use the song in his presidential announcement. Oh, wait, this is not what Neil Young said. Oh, this is what
some statement. Some statement. Yeah.
It's a statement nonetheless.
Neil
right?
Young, a Canadian citizen, is a supporter of Bernie Sanders for the United States of America. Yeah. And so this is a double whammy for two reasons. And Adam, I'll let you take over. But it's A, it's Neil Young playing a musician's song that the musician doesn't want him to play, which is always a bad scenario. B, Rocking in the Free World takes quite the dour look at the free world. So Adam, let him loose, baby. Let those hound doggies out.
Do it. Analyze that.
Do I need to? Like, how fucking dumb. This happens every election. Every election.
It does.
And it's,
you know what?
It's always Neil Young. Republicans. I don't know why.
It is.
But it's always Neil Young
as well. Wasn't about 5-6 years ago where Neil Young went into it again with somebody else, a politician in the States that were trying to use his song?
They're taking Neil Young songs. They'll do it with Bruce Springsteen songs. Yeah. I'm sure they're doing it with like Woody Guthrie songs. Like people are taking.
No.
Like,
they're not going that far back.
I don't know what it is where they're like how do we connect with people? Let's find rootsy songs that talk about America, about America. Like let's grep the song lyrics and find ones that mention the word America. And
that's really what it
therefore,
is. Yes.
That the song.
Because, but you know what? What does that say? Because they're not looking at the lyrics. What does it say
about the audience? It basically means
that we have the attention span of a goldfish.
Yeah,
we're not going to lyrically look into it, right?
Yeah, and I mean, so there's two ways to look at that, and my non-interesting way to look at it is to go like, you fucking dummies, right? Like, we want your finger on the trigger. You can't listen to a song. But on the other hand, and this is, I think, the more interesting thing, and it's unfortunately less angry.
I'm waiting for it.
No, but the other thing is that it absolutely says something about how music is consumed. Where a lot of times, not only the politicians or the politicians' handlers or whoever's picking these songs, but the public that's actually listening to them at these events, they're not listening to them and thinking, "Oh, this is a song that's actually critical of America. What's going on?" No, a lot of the times they're going, "Hey, I remember this, right? Like this evokes a certain mood. This is a fun song, right?
Yeah. And I remember when I was in my teenage years and I was living, you know, fancy free or in my 20s and I had that. Yeah, it is.
Right.
The purpose is not lyrically, it's to evoke emotion. Yeah. Brilliant.
And I've got to imagine that, like, you know, It's good fun when we all go like, ha ha, Donald Trump, you fucking idiot. Look what you did, right? But I bet you that the majority of people that actually are on the receiving end of this, that are actually hearing these songs at these events, and this is not to say anything about like the people that might vote or support these candidates. This is just people. They wouldn't know. And I think that in a lot of cases where I'm somewhere and I hear a song and it's not one that I'm necessarily familiar with on a lyrical level, but I'm aware of, I may not necessarily clue in on that way either. Like, there's an incredibly ambient sense to how we use music. And, you know, if you take away the people that actually pay attention to it, you know, I'm sure that to the politicians and everyone, they're going like, what? Like, this is a controversy? Like, who cares? It's just a song, right? So that whole thing is interesting to me. Like, it says something about the way that people listen to street music. I mean, that said.
And it's funny also, I mean, it would be different. It would be different if it wasn't Neil Young. Do you know what I mean? If it was, I don't know, if it was One Direction going and singing that song, it would have a different stance. Do you know what I mean? So lyrically, it's one thing, but it's also the fact is that we know who the musician is. We know who the what the musician stands for and how they portray themselves out in the public. And I'm always floored when this happens. And it's always amazing that they take the most politically active people.
I know. And here's the thing too, is like,
I don't get it.
Neil Young, as he gets older, is not becoming more like nostalgic and folksy. He's getting more crazy. And this is like I would be hesitant to use Neil Young, even if I was, you know, even if I was, say, politically of the same. It's like if I was Bernie Sanders, I don't know if I would want to use Neil Young stuff, because Neil is getting like, he's getting blunter and he's getting crankier as he gets older.
Yeah, because you know what? That's the passage of, I'm sorry, Adam. That's the passage of right when you pass a certain age.
His new record is called The Monsanto Years. And it is exactly about what an album called The Monsanto Years would be about, in the most plain language that you could imagine. Like this, there is less subtlety on like the last Anti-Flag record that came out, right? Like,
you mean there's more subtlety?
There's more subtlety than the last Anti-Flag record. Like, it's like don't go near, like, Neil is gonna hit you no matter what you do or say.
He's gone from being like an angry young man to being a cranky old man, you know?
Yeah, like, I love Neil Young to death, but holy shit.
He's become a curmudgeon. That's what he is. So
yeah,
that's a rite of passage. And I'm sure we all have old grandparents, you know, or aging parents, and we start to see those effects on them as well. Like, I have a grandmother, and the things that come out of her mouth, like my Bobby, she's the cutest little thing in the, well, she's not, she's tall, she's 5'10", but she's so funny. She's very Catholic, but she likes, she loves Eddie Murphy, and she loves Delirious and Raw, which doesn't make any sense because she's Catholic. But then she'll get very mad and she'll get very blunt at people when they do things wrong. And when I went to go visit her a few years ago, she saw my one tattoo, because I have two very large tattoos. And she's like, Nicole, why do you have such a big tattoo? Why couldn't you get a small butterfly? Like, you're never going to get married. And it's like things like that, you know, bluntness. Yeah.
So anyways, Donald Trump is a dummy.
What are you going to do?
Neil Young is your grandma. They're cute. That's what we want.
Neil Young is my grandma. And I like, I love grandmas. I love Neil Young because he's my grandma. There you go. That's the conclusion of that.
Here's the real question. Does Donald Trump even care about this at all? Or is this just a blip that like a small amount of pop culture people care about? And 98% of people don't even care about it at all.
For sure. That's exactly what it is. Do you think he cares? I don't even think he made a choice about it. I'm sure it was probably his PR people and his people saying, hey, this is a great song. And then him probably combing back his hair and went, yeah, that works. And then that was it. And that happened.
There's a part of me that believes that.
That's exactly how it happened.
I actually sort of believe that Donald Trump is like, is an Andrew WK style, like live in the moment party maniac. And this is his form of party. Is like, he wakes up in the morning and he's just like, woo, Donald Trump, I'm going to go for president, and just goes for it.
Okay. That's fair. But I don't think that he makes any of the, how am I going to say this? I don't think, I mean, he could go and make that decision because he has a lot of money and whatever have you, and he can do whatever the hell he wants. However, when it comes to certain kind of intricate details, I don't necessarily think he knows about what's going on.
He's got way too much effort into being crazy to worry about that shit, right?
Right?
John, your election is so much more interesting than it was like a few weeks ago.
The election.
John, we love your election more than ours. Like, I mean, I think Adam and I can come and say to you from a perspective is that there's so much more. I don't, there's just so much more stuff going on when it comes to your presidential elections than ever. And a lot more slinging of stuff than ever happens. Canadians are just plain boring is what we are.
Well, it actually kind of bums me out, because now more than ever, I think the American electoral process is sort of at a nadir. in that it's almost all a marketing campaign with no substance behind it at all.
I mean, you just figured this out now, John?
If you look at, you know, like Obama, and if you look at Sarah Palin, if you look at Hillary Clinton, it's almost not all, let's look at this person's policy. It's like, let's look at this person, you know? And so more so than ever, we're electing a person based on – I mean,
branding. It's called branding. Get it through your head. It's branding. I mean, so we're branding our music. We're branding our actors. And now we're branding our politicians.
George W. Bush, I think, is probably where it really started to pick up. So before, you know, before Bush, it was Dole and So, I mean, I think George W. Bush is where, I guess, the marketing of a president really became major, and that you're electing a person, not necessarily a set of policies that you want enacted.
Yeah.
And I hope that gets reversed. I don't think it will anytime soon, but we'll see, you know.
I don't think it's going to be anytime soon. I think this is the new trajectory is that you're – because the thing is that, I mean, if you're basing it on policies, then you have to also look at the stuff that they failed at policies. So nobody wants to look at that. So it's a lot easier to look at a person versus past failures or accomplishments, right? So,
whoa. Are we trying to fix America here? Because I just want to talk about how crazy this is.
Well, honestly, Donald Trump is you got to give the guy credit for his chutzpah. He just does whatever the hell he wants, and he never seems to suffer the consequences for it. You know what I mean?
No. He had bankruptcy. Never mind you.
I don't think he actually ever had bankruptcy. I think his companies did. But that's – I mean, honestly, like your company could be in bankruptcy, but you've made millions or billions of dollars.
Yeah, you could be – your company could be bankrupt, but you personally can never –
And that's part of Donald Trump's chutzpah. He's like, my companies went bankrupt, but I didn't. You know,
I came back and I still am. No, awesome. But
like he might do these things that are considered shameful, and by the mere virtue that he doesn't acknowledge that they're shameful, you can't hurt him with that anymore. Sarah Palin tried to do that and it backfired horribly. I think Trump's smarter than Palin, but I don't think Trump's going to make it past the preliminaries. So whatever, it doesn't matter.
And there's a reason why, because the last time somebody who was a celebrity made it past the preliminaries was Reagan. Like that's that says it all right there.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
So I mean,
Jesse Ventura.
Well, you know what? Arnold's a different. You can't include Arnold because Arnold is in a different sector. So, I mean, we're talking about presidency, which is entirely a different beast. You know, running for senator or running for governor, that's like the lower food chain. So, I mean, look, who is it? What was Cher's ex?
Sonny Bono.
Sonny, right?
He was senator.
Yeah. Yeah. So he became senator. Like, so senator is like acceptable, right? But I mean, if you look past in history, right? Take a look back with me. Take a look back, how many actors or celebrities have actually made it into their presidential candidacy is entirely different. Governors are fine. But yeah, it's not going to happen. He should have just run for governor or, you know, Senate.
I hope Donald Trump really gets to be John's next president. I want him to be John's dad. I want him to be the fucking Pope. I want him to be all the good roles. So,
Adam, one last thing. We're all going to be about it wrong here. You know who we should get to be elected to the next president? Mikey Erg. That's who we should get elected to the next president. Mikey Erg.
No.
And then another website can steal our – make fun of us and then steal our idea for doing that exact thing.
Poor Mikey Erg. Always the bridesmaid.
It's so true.
All right. I'm going to play a song before we get out of here.
Never the bride?
Yeah. Okay, so this is
That's all.
So this is a song from a band that all the Canadian music press seems to be talking about. So I've decided that we should play a song from them and see what people think. This is a band on Mint Records called Tough Age. They've got a record that came out today, I believe.
I like them. I'm excited about those guys.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I interrupted
you. Have you heard the record? The new one?
I've heard bits and pieces, but I'm kind of conversing with them to try and do stuff. Anyways, that's
yeah. I've not heard it yet outside of a few songs, and the few ones I'm kind of into. It's cool. Apparently though, they're a little bit all over the place as far as the sound goes. So the song I'm going to play for you is not necessarily what everything on this record sounds like, but that's usually a good thing. So the band,
Adam, you could get in some great stories with this band. You know that, right? You know that. Like, oh, this band has got some, like, you know who you need to get on your show? You need to get Paul Lawton on your show. That would be hilarious.
Let's get Danzig on the show.
No, you can't get Danzig. Can you get Danzig?
I tried him once. Like, I always got him, but not quite.
Remember that picture of Danzig buying cat food and the internet went crazy about it?
Everybody's got to buy cats. Like, they've got cats. I respect the guy for taking good care of his animals.
Poor Danzig can't feed his fucking cat.
Yeah, I know.
The internet going crazy. Like, what's he going to do, hire someone to go feed his cats? Anyways, this record is called I Get the Feeling Central. It's from the Vancouver, British Columbia band called Tough Age. The song I'm going to play is a little bit of a glam rocky kind of tune. It is called Snakes and Ladders. So this is Tough Age. They're on Mint Records out of Vancouver. And the song is Snakes and Ladders. We'll be back in just a minute on the Punk News Podcast. And that was the song Snakes and Ladders by Tough Age. I think that's it. I think that's all we need to do on tonight's show. Nikki,
it's a very long show.
Plug your shit here. What do people need to know about?
Plug your shit. That, and that is a poor choice of words.
Wow. I mean, plug my shit. That's usually something that I say. Anyways. Okay. So I do a podcast. It's a horrible podcast, but thanks for having me on anyways. So I do this thing called Everything and the Kitchen Sink. I'm not even timely like you guys. Wow, I'm really horrible at selling myself here. So how you can find me is eatks.net, which kind of sounds like it's Eat Kansas, but it's not. It's Eat Everything and the Kitchen Sink. I thought I was being funny, but apparently not. You can find me on Facebook, but don't. And then you can find me on Twitter, and beware, because I don't necessarily follow you back, and I'm not very nice. And that's about it. I don't know. What else do you want me to say about myself? Wow, I just really painted myself in a very horrible light. I swear I'm a really a nice person. Yeah, that's it. EKS.net.
The Clash like you, so you got that going for you. Or at least the
Yeah, I do. I have half the Clash. So I have Topper saying thanks for your support and stuff like that when I fangirled him in a DM message. And it was really – I'm sorry. I'm just going to fangirl all over the place on your podcast. But I was like, yeah. So I'm like all excited and I can't wait for you to have another Carbon Silicone, you know, single. And why haven't you done one in the past, you know, 3 years?
Topper's not in Carbon Silicone, is he?
I'm sorry, what?
Is Topper in Carbon Silicone?
No. Mick Jones.
I thought you said Topper.
Yeah. No. So anyways, so I was talking about that. And then I was talking about how I spent I bought the vinyl. So I talked about earlier the vinyl. Do you know how much I paid for that vinyl? I paid $100 for a record. I think that's the most I've ever paid for a record ever in my life. So well worth it.
So Nikki has the respect of the fake Topper and the fake Mick Jones that make jokes on Twitter.
Well, you know what? But at the same time, I might have – we don't know if they're fake. We will find out in September, and then I will eat them alive. I will, like, literally put them on the table and I don't know, shame them and publicly horribly shame them because I'm apparently really good at that when somebody pisses me off. And we'll see what happens. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see. It's good because it's like investigative journalism, right? I'm trying to weed out the fakers. We'll see. To be continued, but you have to follow me on Twitter to find out.
Yeah, so if you want to look for Nikki on Twitter, it is at EATKS. We are the Punk News Podcast. You can get us at podcast.punknews.org if you want to send us any email, or you can find us on Twitter as well. I'm at Adam White. John is at John Gentile. Is that right?
That's right, baby.
Is it John Gentile or is it John Gentile?
Gentile.
Okay.
You learn something every day on the Punk News Podcast. All right, that's it. We're out. See you guys next week.